Think about this, ladies and gentlemen. The sacrifices on the altar continued, an altar that is meant to embody Jewish unity. Meanwhile, war rages within and without. A Roman assault egged on by Jews against their fellow Jews within the temple. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 55. Enter Rome. I'm Mayor Soloveitchik. I was glad when they said unto me, Let us go into the house of the Lord. Our feet shall stand within thy gates, O Jerusalem. Jerusalem is built as a city whose parts are joined together. So the psalmist David exclaimed, A city whose parts are joined together. This is a reference to the fact that Jerusalem, as we have noted, is created from the sheer territory of two tribes, Judah and Benjamin, and according to the rabbis, it is at the site of the temple altar where the two territories meet. This is meant to remind us of the formation of the Israelite family, for we know that the selection of Jacob's son Judah as ancestor of the monarchy began with his sacrifice for his brother Benjamin in Egypt. Standing before the purported vizier, Judah, who had once suggested selling Joseph, stood before that very same Joseph, shielding his brother Benjamin, saying, Take me instead of him. In this extraordinary act, Judah exhibited a repentance that united the tribes with the Joseph they had betrayed, bound them as brethren together, and ensured the covenantal continuity of the Jewish people. All this is replayed for eternity in Jerusalem, a unique symbiosis of geography and theology, a spatial recreation of Judah's and Benjamin's covenantal unity. The house of God is uniquely situated in order to embody the brotherhood of the Jewish people. As a city, it illustrates the possibility of appreciating the members of Israel for their unique gifts while finding the means of uniting them all. But centuries later, the altar in Jerusalem became a site not of love, but conflict, civil war between brothers. And it was this that would bring into Jerusalem the enemy that would ultimately destroy the altar itself. The battle between two Hasmoneans, the sons of Shlomtzion, raged. Amazingly, as the forces of brother against brother faced off against each other on either side of Jerusalem's walls, the sacrifices on the altar in the temple continued. But there was not enough animals in Jerusalem and a greater supply was needed. So incredibly, as these forces were fighting each other, they also worked out an arrangement whereby those inside Jerusalem would send money over the wall and those outside Jerusalem would send animals back into Jerusalem. Josephus writes, describing Aristobulus inside the city and the forces of Aristobulus' brother Hyrcanus outside. Quote, While the priests and Aristobulus were besieged, it happened that the feast called the Passover was come, at which it is our custom to offer a great number of sacrifices to God. But those that were with Aristobulus wanted sacrifices and desired that their countrymen, without, would furnish them with such sacrifices and assured them that they should have as much money for them as they should desire. Josephus then reports that, however, those outside Jerusalem did not deliver the animals for offerings as promised, leading the priests in the temple to pray against their brethren on the other side. Quote, But when the others had received it, they did not deliver the sacrifices, but arrived at that height of wickedness as to break the assurances they had given and to be guilty of impiety towards God by not furnishing those that wanted them with sacrifices. And when the priests found they had been cheated and that the agreements they had made were violated, they prayed to God that he would avenge them on their countrymen. Nor did he delay that their punishment, but sent a strong and vehement storm of wind that destroyed the fruits of the whole country, till a modius of wheat was then bought for 11 drachmae. End quote. This is Josephus' version of the story, and the irony within its details is profound. These warring factions not only fought in what should be the locus of Jewish covenantal unity, but they also, according to Josephus, fought during the holiday, whose central offering is meant to bring about this covenantal unity. For rightly understood, the celebration of Passover is not only spiritual, but political. Thus, the main offering, that of the Paschal Lamb, was brought not by individuals, but groups of individuals that ate together at the Seder as a symbol of the Jewish metaphysical bond. Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik put it this way, quote, Only free and proud people think of others and share with others. The birth of the Chesed community of a nation within which people unite, give things away, care for each other, share what they possess, is symbolized by the Paschal sacrifice. God did not need the Paschal lamb. He had no interest in the sacrifice. He simply wanted the people, slaves who had just come out of the house of bondage, to emerge from their isolation and insane self-centeredness into the Chesed community. And Rabbi Soloveitchik adds, a new fellowship was formed around the Paschal lamb. A new community sprang into existence. Being together, living with each other, sharing something many possess in common, was made possible by the ceremonial of the Paschal lamb. End quote. Understood this way, a terrible irony is revealed in Josephus' account. Jerusalem was seeking funding for the other sacrifices of the Passover holiday, even as they were fighting with each other on behalf of two Hasmonean princes that were illustrating the very self-centeredness that Passover was meant to undo. The reality was also metaphor. The walls of Jerusalem divided Jew and Jew, Hasmonean and Hasmonean, brother and brother. The altar of David, meant to be a symbol of Jewish unity, had suddenly become the ultimate locus of discord and division. Strikingly, a similar story to that found in Josephus appears in the Talmud, with a few fascinating differences, including the following. Unlike Josephus's version, where money is sent over the wall and no animals are returned, according to the Talmud, it is a pig that is given to the Jews of Jerusalem by those on the other side. And the Talmud reports that at that moment, as the hoofs of the pig touched the walls of Jerusalem, the earth shook, symbolizing, perhaps, the coming doom of the sacred city itself. The poetic symbolism of this version of the tale can be unpacked in two ways. First, as the Talmud scholar Yonatan Feintuch points out, the story can be seen as reflecting the terrible downfall of the Maccabees, of the Hasmonean house. The Maccabean revolt had begun with the righteous Mattathias, who had been outraged at the desecration of the altar by the Hellenists, embodied by the sacrifice of a pig upon it. Now, in killing each other in Jerusalem, at the walls of Jerusalem, the Hasmonean forces were undoing the legacy of all that the Hasmonean family had created. To this, one might also add that the story of the pig touching the walls of Jerusalem is also a hint to the next foreign threat that this civil war will help bring about. For it was this battle between brothers, between descendants of the mighty Maccabees, that brought the next enemy of the Jews into Judea. At an impasse, both forces, those of Aristobulus and of Hyrcanus, turned to a prominent general of the Roman Republic, Pompey, who had himself overtaken the Seleucid Empire. A bribing contest ensued between the two brothers. Josephus again, quote, "And when both of them promised to give him money, Aristobulus 400 talents and Hyrcanus no less, he accepted of Aristobulus's promise, for he was rich and had a great soul, and desired to obtain nothing but what was moderate, whereas the other was poor and tenacious, and made incredible promises in hopes of greater advantages," end quote. Pompey thus sided originally with Aristobulus, but as Josephus further tells, eventually Aristobulus failed to obey all of Pompey's directives, leading to a falling out, and Josephus thus describes Pompey's march on Jerusalem, quote, "At this Pompey was very angry, and put Aristobulus into prison, and came himself to the city, which was strong on every side, excepting the north, which was not so well fortified," end quote. At this point, according to Josephus, a debate broke out into Jerusalem as to how the Jews should respond. Some of the denizens of the city, themselves part of the anti-Aristobulus faction, opened up the city to Pompey, allowing him to enter the Hasmonean palace. But the forces of Aristobulus occupied the Temple Mount, and thus, within Jerusalem, a siege of the temple itself began, with Rome outside, urged on by those loyal to the Hyrcanus Hasmonean faction and the forces of Aristobulus within the walls of the temple. Josephus sets the scene, quote, "So Pompey sent his lieutenant Piso with an army and placed garrisons both in the city and in the palace to secure them, and fortified the houses that joined to the temple and all those which were more distant and without it. And in the first place he offered terms of accommodation to those within. But when they would not comply with what was desired, he encompassed all the places thereabout with a wall, wherein Hyrcanus did gladly assist him on all occasions." And Josephus adds, "He brought his mechanical engines and battering rams from Tyre, and placing them on the bank, he battered the temple with the stones that were thrown against it," end quote. Thus we have a temple besieged, battering rams and catapults assaulting God's house. And in the midst of all this, incredibly, sacrifices on the altar continued. Stones flying overhead, and the temple rites going on nevertheless. Quote, "And any one may hence learn how very great piety we exercise toward God and the observance of his laws, since the priests were not at all hindered from their sacred ministrations by their fear during the siege, but did still twice a day in the morning and about the ninth hour offer their sacrifices on the altar. Nor did they omit those sacrifices if any melancholy accident happened by the stones that were thrown among them." End quote. Think about this, ladies and gentlemen. The sacrifices on the altar continued. An altar that is meant to embody Jewish unity. Meanwhile, war rages within and without. A Roman assault egged on by Jews against their fellow Jews within the temple. Finally, the siege was broken. The Romans entered the temple space, overpowering Aristobulus' forces. Josephus' description here is important. Quote, "So the enemy poured in apace, and Cornelius Faustus, the son of Sylla, with his soldiers, first of all ascended the wall, and next him Furius the centurion, with those that followed on the other part, while Fabius, who was also a centurion, ascended it in the middle, with a strong body of men after him. But now all was full of slaughter, some of the Jews being slain by the Romans, and some by another. Nay, some there were who threw themselves down the precipices, or put fire to their houses and burnt them, as not able to bear the miseries they were under. Of the Jews there fell 12,000, but of the Romans, very few." End quote. As we hear these words, we all instinctively understand what this foretells. We know that some centuries after this moment, another siege around Jerusalem took place when the Romans entered the temple again. And we realize that the first of these sieges led to the second. That in a very real sense, the destruction of the temple in 70 CE began here in the mid-60s BCE. The civil war between the Hasmoneans brought down independent Jerusalem, a fact that would last until the 20th century and the rise of the State of Israel. Josephus' words again are worth noting. Quote, "Now the occasions of this misery which came upon Jerusalem were Hyrcanus and Aristobulus, by raising a sedition one against the other. For now we lost our liberty and became subject to the Romans, and were deprived of that country which we had gained by our arms from the Syrians." End quote. The achievements of the Hasmoneans were undone by the Hasmoneans. A once unified family brought about its own downfall through its own discord. I often cite the story told by Natan Sharansky, who, as he describes, was conversing with his neighbor in Israel. The neighbor was reflecting nostalgically about the Jewish unity felt during the Soviet Jewry movement, and the neighbor said to Sharansky something like, "Natan, it was such a great time when you were in prison." And Sharansky essentially said in response, "I'm sorry, I'm not going back to prison. Jews will have to find another reason to love one another." It is ultimately Jerusalem that reminds us of our covenantal obligations to one another. And when those obligations are fulfilled, it will be Jerusalem that will be our inspiration. This is Meir Soloveitchik. Looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.